Hey, and welcome to the IABC Ottawa podcast, The Voice,
the show where we talk about all things related to communications.
Ottawa is one of the International Association of Business Communicators' largest chapters in the world, and we are very pleased to bring you a podcast that covers everything from marketing,
strategy,
social media,
crisis comms,
public affairs,
to whatever else is relevant to communicators.
I'm Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sherry, and welcome everyone to episode 122.
A quick reminder to everyone before we start that if we sound a little different than normal, it's because we're recording this episode remotely using Zoom instead of being in the studio. But we encourage you to stick with us, even if the quality isn't what you're used to. We still have some really great content to bring you.
That's right. And if you missed last month's episode, you should definitely go back and listen to it after this. It is on trust in employers and brands during COVID-19, and you can find it on the IABC website. Now, this week, we're going to be talking about another topic related to COVID-19, that is mental health in the workplace during the pandemic.
Exactly. And some people may not know this, but May 4th through to May 10th, it's Mental Health Week in Canada. And obviously, we know mental health is incredibly important any time of the year. But right now, with so many people dealing with so much stuff because of the coronavirus, we just thought this was an important opportunity to have a discussion on this specifically. Now, I wasn't able to join this time around, but Sherry, why don't you tell people about the guest?
Yeah, so we reached out to someone named Dr. Bill Howitt, who is a behavioral scientist with more than 30 years of experience in the field of mental health, addiction, as well as human resources. And he is currently the Chief of Research, Workforce Productivity at the Conference Board of Canada. And since the lockdown began, he's been publishing these daily mental health videos on the Conference Board of Canada's website. And the series is called Carrying On Mental Health Strategies for COVID-19. You can also get those in podcast form on Spotify and iTunes right now. And as you're going to hear in a moment, our conversation focused on how employers, big and small, can support the mental health of their staff, why that's so important, not just right now, but all the time, and also how COVID-19 may actually be changing the conversation around mental health in the workplace. So he had some really good points. I'm really excited to share it with you guys. And Sarah, afterwards, I would love to know your thoughts on what he had to say.
Okay, I can't wait. Let's play it.
So hi, Bill. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I guess to start, as sort of an opening question, what are you seeing employers do to support mental health right now?
I think the big one I'm seeing right now is that they're becoming aware that it actually is a real thing, which is very exciting considering I've been talking about mental health for the past several years. I can't remember. I'm getting older, but it's been a while. And what's happened is we've had the challenge with barriers around stigma and starting to understand the business case around mental health and getting employers to really realize that mental health is not something that's just a small strategy and you send a couple of people to training and you have EAP. It's actually mental health is everything the employee does, every experience they have in the workplace, because every interaction with an employee can be a positive or a negative. And so what's this pandemic, COVID-19, if it's done anything, it's actually brought to people's level of attention the fragility of human behavior in regards to when you create massive disruption and we start to create changes and there's additional financial stress and then you add the isolation and then add the level of living, because Canada basically is very similar to being in a war zone now. Everybody is at risk. And that's created that level of anxiety in the essential workers and that. So to cut through it, I would say the big thing now, employers know it's an issue that puts a positive that we could be driving some stigma out of the conversation. Employers know that employees need mental health support. Governments know employees need health support. And what I try to get people to realize, and employers are talking more about this, is what are the things that employers can do that are helping to charge their employees' battery? And what can they do to stop? So that's that idea around promoting mental health, reducing mental harms. And in this case, employers are spending more time, I believe, being mindful around social isolation and the impact of the absence of social connection gaps, how that can have an impact in an employee experience, as well as to be mindful, employers are being mindful that they have employees home now, some are single with children, who are now having roles of parenting and trying to do their job. So the thing I'm noticing employers are doing is the ones that are paying attention to this, of course, are being mindful of what employees need to do with in regards to priorities and helping employees to create a set of tracks that they know what success is. Because the challenge is, as you would probably know this, is many people that if they're a non-essential worker and they're working at home, they're in every day. Every day feels like Saturday and they're having structure and routine. And then if you have folks that are essential workers, they have the challenge of dealing with a pathogen and the anxiety that comes with being around a pathogen. So it's, I think we're getting the conversation more, I think.
Yeah, I think, mental health could be a conversation any time of the year. And part of the reason we're talking about it now is because it's May 4th is the beginning of Mental Health Week, and because of this, COVID pandemic. But it is interesting to hear you say that what's happened is it's brought mental health to sort, or it seems to have for some employers, brought it to the forefront. There is a risk maybe for employers supporting their staff. Is there a balance between showing support and not overstepping and providing medical advice? How can employers walk that line?
Yeah, that's really good. That's one of the reasons why we spend time training managers around what's called duty to inquire, understanding what with inside the frame of a virtual world, what normal and perhaps at-risk behaviors are. And I try to get people to think about it is that when you're an employer and you're not a mental health professional, you have to be careful about getting in conversations that you're not trained in. I mean, I have a PhD in counseling psychology, and it took me 10 years to become competent to learn how to have conversations with people and understand where I'm at in the conversation, because just having a conversation, you may or may not know about ab reaction, the other things you can do, or transfer and the different things, or how that may be impacting you, etc. So by training the managers in what's called duty to inquire, meaning that if they start to become aware of behaviors that raise concern for them about the employee's well-being, that may be impacting their functionality or creating some impairment, whether it be a substance use issue or whether it's a mental health issue. And I try to make it really simple. It's based on what you're familiar with your employees. So for example, if you get in a car and you start the car and the car doesn't start, you reasonably ought to know there's something wrong with your car. And at that point in time, you would make a decision if you wanted to drive that car, to get someone who knew how to help that car. With employees, you start noticing changes, that they're not showing up to meetings, Zoom meetings, or missing meetings. They might be becoming more irritable, they're missing deadlines, struggling. That's where keeping those lines of communications open in regards and keeping it around the work. And then when employees start, saying I'm having a hard time or with my home life, or I'm concerned, or I don't feel comfortable, and you're picking up potential for, like, right now we're going to have a lot of issues. One of the, probably the biggest issues with EAP providers right now is the amount of relationship conflict with all these people at home. And we also, child abuse and domestic violence, those are things we don't like talking about. Research shows when you start confining people, those bubble. And when employers start to pick that up, by how they train their managers to have these conversations, to know what their boundaries are, will help them reduce their risk from getting involved in conversations they may not be trained in. When you start thinking about all that, it's just helping managers learn to stay inside their track, because it's not their job to try to solve mental health issues. It's their job to help facilitate and be careful, good intentions. However, saying that, being caring and compassionate and listening to people and helping them talk is okay, as long as you're not getting into issues that are personal in nature that you're not equipped to do. That's a fine line.
That's such a really, sorry to interrupt, that is such a, I think, a really good point, not just for managers, but for colleagues.
Yes.
As well, because we're hearing so much right now, you know, reach out to your colleagues, reach out to your friends, support them. But we are not, as individuals, most of us, you know, trained mental health professionals. So, you know, facilitate, but I guess don't overstep is a really good reminder for probably everyone right now.
Absolutely. And the other thing I would say to you on this is that one of the challenges we're having with mental health, too much of the programs talking about what we do when someone breaks treatment. What we're not spending enough time is getting every employer and every employee to be aware of how to build their own mental fitness plan, like they would a physical health plan, and to follow it daily with intention. And that, my belief system is, can really, really help people charge the batteries. If we can educate them and get them talking with their peers, employers, it's as much as I tell you I'm going to the gym to work out. If we can get to that level where people can talk about their mental fitness the same as physical health, we're going to remove all the stereotypes. We're going to eliminate them. And we're going to help curb what the World Economic Forum says by 2030, it'll be the number one cause of premature death in the planet will be mental health concerns. So this to me is hopefully, if again, I'll say it again, COVID-19 may be a blessing, that as much as the pain and all this, it might, from a mental health perspective, help us wake up to realize we need to really take this stuff a little bit more serious than we have.
Yeah, and sort of see a culture shift in the workplace, maybe post COVID-19, where mental health is viewed almost equal to physical health.
Absolutely. So think about it this way. If you showed up to the emergency with a broken leg, you're pretty comfortable that you know that someone's going to fix your broken leg, help you, whether it's 15 minutes or 2 hours. But you show up to the emergency having a panic attack and need help, you may not have the same equity and the speed of service. And that's where we need to get to. We need to be able to, we can rapidly triage physical injuries. We have to be able to get people where someone doesn't need to wait 6 weeks to get to see me for 1 hour.
And also, I think just from a social acceptance standpoint, like if you show up to work with a broken leg, it's something people can see. If you show up to work and you're having anxiety attacks, that is something people might be able to see, but it's not necessarily as accepted. I want to get to, again, sort of the employer role in this as well, because we talked a bit about facilitating services, but you have larger businesses that have built-in counseling programs and built-in HR departments that will facilitate and connect people with counseling, with therapy, whatever it may be. Smaller businesses may not have that. So for companies that don't, what can they do? If I'm like a small mom and pop shop, I still have employees, you know, facing the same issues. Where do I direct them to?
That's an excellent question. I actually did a webinar this week with the chambers, and there's many, many small businesses in the chamber, for example, that are 4 to 8 employees. And the chamber has the ability that for as little as $4.50, they can get into per employee per month, they can get their employees in a benefit of employee assistance programs. So they, for example, the chambers use an EAP company called Arite, like Latte Arite. And what happens is that that gives the access to mental health providers that can help over a number of sessions that can help them solve problems. So what I'm trying to say is different organizations. So if I'm a small business, a mom and pop shop, I can join my local chamber, and through Johnstone provided the opportunity of a benefit plan where you can buy a part of a bulk benefit. So if you want to get, you know, paramedical for your folks to get them access to a psychologist, you can get involved in these in what's called a group plan that drives your costs down, and that creates that accessibility. That's one option. Another option is that, you know, things like the Canadian Mental Health Association has chapters all across the country, and they have different programs like Bounce Back and for resiliency. They have different programs that are available, that are accessible, that different businesses, depending on their size, can take. Then there's during this COVID-19, there's free resources that are available that they can use, such as a Beacon. If you go to Beacon Cognitive Behavior Online, you'll see they have a COVID-19 program. You'll see, which is sponsored by Green Shield and Manulife. And then you'll see that Starlink's giving things away for free. We're at the conference board working with WSPS doing things, as well as with the Canadian Society of Safety Engineers.
You have daily videos up online. I just want to mention that because I think some of the free resources are the most important right now, but you want to make sure you're getting a good resource people, there's so much economic uncertainty.
Thanks for mentioning about the daily video blog we're doing. The conference board's taking that, and they've called Carrying On Mental Health Strategies for COVID-19. So they're turning those video blogs into podcasts so people can get access to them in a different medium.
Yeah. And the other thing I think to keep in mind is some people have working employees, some people who have staff who are laid off. How often, I mean, depending on what your situation is, should employers be checking in or managers be checking in? What is the, is there a best practice there?
Yeah, there is. And what a great question. Here's the best practice. Do unto others as they want done unto them, the platinum rule. Be a manager, call your employee and say, listen, you know, we do these normal check-ins as a team where we do our online meetings, whether daily or bi-daily, for you. How can I ensure you know that you're not alone, and how can I connect with you? What works best for you? Would a text message saying, hey, you okay, need to talk, a short email, call you before your coffee in the morning, end of the day? What works best for you? And not assume that every employee needs the exact same amount of check-ins. Somebody is, for example, that's sheltering by themselves, and they don't have any family around or other responsibilities, they may benefit from more check-ins than someone who has all their family, other responsibilities, and their time is compressed. And just one more call I don't really need, just to be polite. So I think it's being aware that not everybody's going to need the same thing, and empowering employees. And then the most important is, whatever you say you're going to do, do it.
Yeah, follow through.
Yep.
So sort of some key takeaways I think that you've touched on for employers is to check in, to facilitate mental health support, but don't overstep. You know, we're not mental health professionals, but connect people with resources. There's free things available, even if you're not a big enough company to provide internal mental health support. And I guess hopefully going forward, we see a culture shift where this becomes an ongoing conversation and something that's supported outside of pandemic times.
That would be awesome. I mean, and the other one I would say to you that employers can consider too is that we're doing a study of the conference board with WSPS, and we have a free tool called the Mental Fitness Index that a person can go online and complete this short survey and give them their own mental fitness score. And why that's important is they print that off and put the date on it and then encourage their mental fitness monitoring. And then if they follow a basic mental fitness plan, like do a couple things with intention, exercise, and get their sleep and stay connected, then in every 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, repeat it. And because my big concern with this, and I know the government's doing the best job they can, and it's a challenge in the federal and provincial and municipality, and this is a, there's no set of instructions for what they're trying to solve every day. The challenge being is that this could go on like 12 weeks more, 6 more weeks, but this impact of COVID could go on 12 months, 18 months, and very much like a spaceship, like a NASA space journey, you know, we know if you don't pay attention, it can impact your mental health. So that would be something I would really encourage employers to be thinking about, is in getting employees, because doing this for 30 years, one of the big challenges with mental health, it could slip up on you, sneak up on you, like that extra 5, 10, 15, 20 pounds, you know, you all of a sudden you go, wow, how did I put that on? Well, stress accumulates, right? And if you're not paying attention, and then you start looking at some compensating behaviors like that extra drink of wine that goes 2 glasses becomes 3 to 4, and then you have a bag of chips one night that becomes every other night, and then every night, and you start snacking and looking for different strategies that impact your health and create some other habits, then you're on a slippery slope where your mental health starts to erode. And that's why I like having an objective frame of reference, so that you're not actually subjectively, your own cognitive dissonance rationalizing it. And you may have a more difficult time knowing what normal is in a non-normal time.
Yeah. The other thing I guess I've heard is some people may not realize the toll that that time can take. So the longer this goes on, sort of some people will adjust, but others may find it harder and harder. And also that because there's so much going on right now, somebody who works in psychology was telling me that some people may not seek help until after, because they're so busy caring for other people.
I agree so much. That's that compassion fatigue that's happening with some of our frontline responders. We may not know how much post-traumatic stress and trauma is until this passes. Then we might find we have some physicians and nurses that need some time to heal.
Yeah.
And I think doing this kind of stuff helps provide, I hope, some education and provide a frame of reference for people to consider. I think that's why we're doing this.
Well, Bill, thank you so much. I know you've probably given us a ton to think about, and hopefully we'll talk again at another point when this is, I don't want to say over, but further down the line, and see how people are doing then.
Thank you. Take care.
Have a good one.
Oh my God, that was fantastic. Maybe it's because I'm, you know, feel passionate about the subject matter, but I think honestly, it's so vital, these recommendations, these reflections. What did you think, Sherry?
Yeah, he was great. He brought up some points that I hadn't thought about myself. The main one for me was when we check in with our colleagues, you know, you're not a trained mental health professional.
Yes.
Because we want to reach out and help so much, but to do that, to realize that you don't have to solve someone's problems,
yeah.
And to think about that when you're checking in with people.
I love that, because I think, and you made a good point. It's not just employers, it's your employees too. It's your colleagues. We might not be face-to-face with people right now, which is sometimes hard to see who's struggling, but a check-in here and there is all you can do. And it's actually the best thing you can do.
Yeah. And I was really glad to hear about as well, because I know of so many people who are in a situation where they don't have benefits.
Mm.
They don't have the ability to go seek counseling or therapy. He gave employers sort of options where they could buy into a plan.
Yeah.
He named some free resources as well, which I think is so important, because not everyone is in a position right now where they can go seek out paid help.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I mean, I really hope, and it sounds like he is hopeful of this too, that COVID-19, I can't believe it's going to take a pandemic to change some of our behaviors and our thoughts and, you know, perceptions. But it sounds like he's hoping that employers will walk away from this saying, yeah, maybe we do need to boost or enhance our benefits package or think about the way we talk about mental health at the very least, right?
Yeah. And that employers are, I like to think employers might be taking it more seriously than they were before. Like my employer has, you know, checked in, made some new services, available for mental health. Not a lot. And, you know, I have heard from friends that say, well, my employer sent me something, but I feel like it's just lip service because I'm still required to produce the same amount of work at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you found or what you've heard from people.
Yeah, it has been a lot more just over the phone, you know, casual check-ins. But I appreciate it. I appreciate people saying, you know, if you need to take a day, take a day. Mental health is important because you don't hear that all the time. And I think, too, what I found was really interesting about the conversation was, you know, he was saying that the focus is always on crisis situations when we talk about mental health in the workplace scenario, right? It's a, oh, this person has an emergency, so they need to take time off. But there isn't enough emphasis, he was saying, on just the daily mental health. And he calls it fitness, right? Fitness strategies. And I love that because it kind of equates it to physical health and just saying there needs to be more emphasis on these sort of daily check-ins. After all, mental health is everywhere. It's a human experience. It's in everything we do. So it's not just a one-off. It's in every interaction you have. So hopefully employers are going to think about implementing more permanent strategies.
Yeah, and permanent supports, I think, is the other thing. Because just lastly, your point, you know, people are saying, well, take a day if you need to take a day. That's great if you have a sick day to take.
Right. That's true.
Or a mental health day. Like not every benefits plan has mental health days worked in, but maybe after this, we'll see some change in how benefits plans are done. And then again, more support because so many people work in a gig economy position or role or freelance role where, yeah, I can take a day, but it's, you know, it's, may not be a paid day.
Well, God, it was really, you know, important. And I'm so glad you had this conversation. That is it for this episode of the IABC Ottawa podcast, The Voice, episode 122. We hope you'll join us again next time. Until then, if you have feedback, we'd love to hear it.
We are still on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Our handle is at IABC Ottawa. We are also on LinkedIn. You can also check us out online. The website is ottawa.iabc.com, and you can find info for all of the IABC Ottawa networking, professional development events, future meetups, everything obviously happening right now virtually, but all of that info is there. And I think that's it, right, Sarah? So thank you for listening.
I think that's it. Let the music play.